the unspoken culture of medicine encourages self-sacrifice, deferred needs, and delayed rewards. We always want to put our patients first, but healers cannot optimally heal unless they themselves are first whole.
This is Meaningful Medicine. In a challenging and unpredictable world with high burnout rates, this is a podcast where incredible individuals share their most meaningful patient experiences and focus on those moments of positivity and joy that sparked their love of healthcare and changed the way they practice medicine.
Hi, I'm Nicole Hohenstein, and I'm an emergency medicine resident at UCSF.
Hi, I'm Shiva Kayambashi. I'm a doctor and professor of family and community medicine at UCSF.
We're the co-hosts of Meaningful Medicine. We created this podcast to highlight stories of healthcare professionals who have found a sense of meaning, resilience, and joy in their work.
Hi, Nicole. It's good to see you.
Hey, Shiva. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. It's Friday. I'm excited that you and I get to just sit and talk with each other this time around and just have a conversation without any particular plan.
I am really excited. This is a new segment we're trying out and a little nervous. I feel like the unscripted version of us, who knows how it will be, but willing to give it a try.
Yeah, we get to let loose this time. We usually are so, we try to moderate ourselves so much, but I actually feel a little bit more relaxed. And I think if we can get into being relaxed about it, we're going to just have a great conversation. And hopefully it'll be meaningful, not just for ourselves, but for anyone who might be listening.
I love it. I love it. I think this is also a cool time. You know, I just started intern year a couple of months ago, and it's a good check-in and to discuss, you know, the trials and tribulations of having that transition, going from medical school to becoming a doctor, becoming a resident.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too, Nicole, as we were planning to check in today, you're almost at the 3-month mark of having started residency as a new intern in emergency medicine. And it's really such a big transition. It's not just intellectually a whole new experience. It's also really, there's a lot of emotion about becoming an intern that we don't get enough time or space to talk about, and a lot of challenges that are beyond the physical rigors of it and the mental rigors, but there's also a lot of emotional, and I would also add spiritual challenges. You're seeing a lot of people that are very sick and having life and death situations, and you're in a high stakes situation, things that you've never seen or done before. And so that being such a big topic, I'm just wondering, as this week is coming to a close, what are some things that are on your mind lately, like this week? What's especially big and important in your mind and heart this week?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you asked this question. I think you're right. Intern year, there is so much going on. I think emotions are high, stress is high. You have so much more responsibility, which for me feels enormous and is scary. And I think on top of work and on top of all the responsibilities there, I think we often forget to also think about us outside of medicine. And we are human and no one is perfect. And I think it's been really tough these past few weeks. And unfortunately, with the passing of a fellow Bay Area resident, intern, it really sparks in a lot of us that feeling that there is a lot placed on us and there's a lot of responsibility, a lot of stress. Oftentimes, we're moving to new cities, we're meeting new people. We are almost expected day one to be somewhat experts in the day-to-day responsibilities of being a physician, yet it's only day one and nobody is perfect on day one. And I think a lot of us are feeling overwhelmed and it's hitting a lot of us hard, the feeling that unfortunately suicide amongst physicians is not uncommon. Unfortunately, it's heartbreaking to hear, but each year in the United States, roughly 300 to 400 physicians die by suicide. Approximately 1 in 15 physicians experience suicidal ideation. And unfortunately, rates of depression amongst medical students is 15 to 30% higher than the general population. I think these statistics highlight the importance of checking in with your coworkers, your fellow residents, and your fellow medical students to make sure that you are supporting them and they're not going through an unspoken crisis. And actually, this week on September 17th is National Physician Suicide Awareness Day. And so I think this is very timely and a very important, but can be very triggering topic.
I think our hearts are broken for anyone who's struggling so much with their mental health, whether they're an intern or a second or third year resident or a medical student or not medical, it doesn't matter who you are, that life can be so distressing, especially these days. COVID has not helped for social support at all or for any feeling of stability in the world or in our own lives. And the need to look out for each other feels especially poignant, especially meaningful. And when we were talking earlier, Nicole, you had mentioned that you're especially alerted, aren't you, to kind of picking up on vibes of your fellow interns and fellow residents and just seeing, checking in with each other and noticing who doesn't look like they're okay. I really respected how you shared that you feel moved to check in and ask, are you okay? And what can I do to help you? And sharing your own story of distress makes it more possible for others to feel like it's okay to talk about things not being okay. And I think that's really important. And there's just too many horrible numbers about how high the rates of suicide, depression, and suicide are among people in medicine and nursing. I know that's also such high stakes. To mention, Nicole, that you and I both watched a really wonderful TED Talk that we'll link here at the bottom of our podcast today by a Dr. Dominic King. And it's really worth watching, isn't it? It was so short. It was only about 11 minutes. But he was able to highlight in such a beautiful and meaningful way how one of the things that really helps people to stay connected to themselves is literally to stay connected, is to notice, where do I feel disconnected? And how do I reconnect? And sometimes we need others to help us. And sometimes we can do that ourselves just by checking in with ourselves. I'm curious what else about his talk was moving to you today.
Yeah, I highly recommend everyone check out this very quick 11-minute TED Talk with very powerful story by Dr. Dominic King. And I think I totally agree with you, Shiva. I think this is just a good reminder. I think checking in with ourselves, but checking in with those around us, the power of normalizing difficult situations when other people are struggling. Oftentimes, at least for me, I'm feeling this imposter syndrome. I'm feeling like I don't know enough. I'm feeling like those around me, they seem so much, you know, cooler, more collected. They obviously know more information than I do. They're so much more prepared to be a physician. They're taking such better care of their patients. And that feeling of inadequacy and that feeling like there's so much weight and responsibility, and am I good enough? Am I actually a doctor? And do I have the skills necessary to do a good job, are oftentimes going in my head, which for me, sharing my insecurities, sharing my struggles and my wins, but definitely my struggles, I think normalizes it for my colleagues, for my coworkers, and I think creates that bond and that community and normalizes the fact that we're not supposed to know everything, even though it feels like we're supposed to know everything.
Right, exactly. My very first day of being an intern in family medicine, and I was on call, and I was paired with an amazing third-year resident, thank God, because don't put me in this situation. I don't know anything yet. I really didn't, as you said. And it was a really incredibly busy day and night. You know, in those days, they worked like 36-hour shifts when you were on call. And it was incredibly busy. But I remembered I felt tethered to him, like almost at the waist. Like everywhere he went, whatever move he made, I did. I was his little mini him. But I remember being called to many, many situations, like just pager, going off to the emergency room, up to ICU, to different units. And there was that first like hour or two where we started, we got our dinner for that night, put our things down. He taught me eat your ice cream first because you're going to need energy and you're also going to, it'll melt. You will never come back to it. And we can always heat up our food again later. So I remember vividly like eating some kind of an ice cream bar. And sure enough, he got paged to like three different pagers at once and he triaged them. But the most important one was we ran up to a situation where a patient was, we call it crashing. The patient was really declining very quickly in the ICU. And honestly, all I could do is just be grateful that I wasn't in charge because I was really just watching him. And I admired him so much. Everything happened so quickly. And the honest truth is, it's a blur. It was a blur then, and it's still a blur now. But what I remember is watching him in action, where he had some sense of clarity and confidence and focus. He knew to say this needed to be done. We need this IV to get started. And the team, you know, the nursing staff, the respiratory therapist, the ventilator, all the things that needed to be dealt with were being dealt with. And again, the nurses were amazing. The respiratory care therapist was amazing. Everyone worked together. And my senior resident appeared to be in charge. Like he appeared to know enough about, we needed some stat, I don't know what drug it was, dopamine. Maybe we started dopamine. Maybe the ventilator needed to be adjusted. I don't know. I remember watching in awe. And two things happened for me. One is my jaw was probably on the floor the whole time, just in awe of like, oh, wow. And the patient did well. The patient survived and did well. It could have gone another way too, but that was what I remembered. And I was in one, terrified that, oh God, if this was me, it would be the end of everyone. But also really uplifted at the idea. I had this vivid moment where I had clarity that he was once an intern, just like me. And so if I hold on and if I keep, I mean, he couldn't be that much more brilliant, right? There were other senior residents who also were very capable. So I thought, I think this is part of the process. I think everyone comes into intern year, especially day one, month one, really most of year one, not knowing so much. And I think that's our job. But our job is to look at the others who can teach us and try to absorb as much as we can, number one. And there's a number two. It's also to have trust and faith in the process that, like, someday I want to be like Ben. And someday I will be like him.
I appreciate you saying that. I think it's reassuring to hear that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And as we see and watch our seniors, knowing that that will one day be us, I think is a great way to look at it and have that reassurance that the process of residency at least is, you know, 3 to 6 years for a reason, because it does take that long to form yourself into the physician that you want to be. I appreciate that. And I thinking through other remarks from Dominic King's TED Talk, something else that really spoke to me and something that we've talked a little bit about on the podcast before is this idea of how much empathy is too much or too little. And I think that we both at least have had an experience where we feel that our empathetic natures may be our Achilles heel, and that feeling too much is too overwhelming and creates a space where we're constantly feeling our patients' pain, thinking about the emotions of family members, thinking about what happened, and really having trouble distancing ourselves from things that have happened and experiences we've had with patients. What I love about Dr. Dominic King's talk was he took everyone's advice in medical school. He turned off his empathetic side or turned down his empathetic side and took that distance from his patients to be able to protect himself. And he actually found that that distance and that loss of empathy created a space where he no longer felt like he was making a difference. He could not appreciate the impact he was having on his patients. And he lost the essence and the meaning behind being a doctor. And for him, it almost resulted in him deciding to end his life. And that decision and that realization to turn back on the empathy and create those connections with patients and feel the feelings and experience the highs and the lows actually added a lot of meaning and grounded him as a physician and created a situation where he felt like he was making a difference and he felt like his life was worth living. For me, at least, I think it's an important reminder that you don't want to dial it back and you don't want to dial it back too much because then you lose the importance and the meaning behind your work.
Yeah. Thank you, Nicole. I agree with you. I mean, that's so profound what you just shared. By the way, for our listeners, just so that if you can check it out down, but the title is Physician Suicide, What Medical Students Need to Know by Dr. Dominic King, and it's a TEDx talk in 2019. We came to medicine because we care about people and we care about life. I heard something, a little clip of Mr. Rogers, where he was interviewed some years back, and he said something really amazing and meaningful in a short sentence. He said something like, and this is probably in the 70s or 80s, the problem is that we've come to a time where we seem to value knowledge more than wisdom. And I think some of medical education, medical training is really emphasizing the knowledge that you pick up along this path. We're tested on knowledge the whole first year and second year and, you know, your step one and boards and all of those exams. And where is the wisdom? And the wisdom is the knowledge of the heart, I think, and the knowledge of the spirit. And so there's something about dialing back your emotions so that you can be mentally clear enough to make the right decisions in urgent situations, right? But there's a way to do that while also being present to the human being that's suffering that urgent situation, right? So when you start, I believe he said it in his talk as well, when you start going back to the idea of taking care of people, and not just the disease that they have, being connected to people, being connected to the humanity that is you, as well as the humanity that is in another, I think that that really gives our lives back, doesn't it? It really gives our sense of a deep connection to really what life is all about, that knowing that we are all in this life together and that we all feel and experience, and this could be me. But I think a lot of what medical education teaches us to dial it back, it's just taken too much to an extreme. You know, like you said, dial it back enough to be effective in the moment. And what do we mean by dial it back? It means you can't just start crying in the middle of a code, right? You just can't sob and feel all your emotions. You need to feel the presence of the gravity of the situation for that person and do enough clear thinking, but be present. And when you have time to process, come back to process with the patient and family and also with yourself.
I agree. And I love how you're bringing up the processes of thinking about and handling tough situations. And as someone who is new to being a physician, new to experiencing day-to-day tragedies and day-to-day challenges with patients, I am still trying to figure out a way for me to process this information. And I'm trying to find also a way to create some sort of safe barrier between work and home. And I'd love for you to share if you have any processes of how you process difficult situations, how you let yourself take the time to process, but how you also create that distance where, you know, I've often found myself right before going to bed, my mind just keeps churning and churning, thinking about patients, or I'm dreaming about stressful situations at work. And oftentimes it's hard to create those boundaries with yourself. And also it's hard to find the time to truly process what has happened and feel satisfied that you are taking the time needed to pay respect for what happened.
You're highlighting such an important, probably like the single most important thing, Nicole, about the experience of being, honestly, of being a doctor, not just being an intern. You're only an intern for 1 year, and you're only a second year for 1 year, and you're only a third year for 1 year, but you're a doctor all of these years, you know, just different levels of your experience. And so your question is so important about just being a doctor and being in any, honestly, anyone in the health professions where you're caring for people that are very ill. And I include all of the health professions. I think it's really the main question. The main question is, how do you do that? How do you process? And Nicole, I think the answer to that question is going to be different for every one of us. But for me, I have to tell you, I think I have shared this with you before. My third year of medical school, and many people I know have this experience, was probably one of the most intense times. And this is where I started to learn a coping mechanism. The reason it was so intense is because, you know, this, you had third year during the pandemic. So there was a very different experience. Mine was obviously way pre-pandemic. So we were very, you know, in person, face to face with horrendously painful life situations for people, you know, people our own age. And again, this is what all of medical practice is going to be about, is you're face to face now with people you can relate to. Your faith, they might remind you of your own mom. They might remind you of a mirror image of yourself or someone you love. So that feeling of, I need to do what's right for them, is really imperative, because they are somebody. They're important. It's not just chest pain. It's not just diarrhea. It's not just hypertension. So that gravity is very real. And the need and the desire to do what's right for them is very real. And then what happens to them, there are things that happen that are beyond what anyone could have imagined. I mean, coming in with a horrible sepsis or with a horrible infection or a horrible accident. So what I learned was, in the moment, to be present and do whatever it was that all of my teachers were teaching me, and this is intern year as well, and all of residencies, just be present and learn and do my best. Then there's what you're talking about, which is the processing of it. You can't really process in real time. In real time, when there are urgent situations, and I'm talking about critical moments in the ED, in the ICU, on the wards, in clinic, in your office, if something important happens, you really just need to pull it together, put all your faculties together to do what you believe is right, or find out what you need to do and do it right. And then, as you said, Nicole, then there's like, but how do you cope with that? Like you, and it's, by the way, it's like rapid fire. Like just when you finished one thing, then there's another, then there's another, then there's another. And you really don't have the time. In a way, that's good. In a way, it's not. But you don't have the time or space. You go from one room to the next room to the next room to the next room. So there's something that's protective by keeping your mind busy and keeping your body busy running around, so you don't really have time to cope or even to remember what just happened. So then you get in the car or you walk home or you bike home or whatever it is, and you're sort of decompressing. And the question is, how do you really put it all together or even? So what I learned in third year and beyond was, I learned that it wasn't as helpful as I had hoped to talk about things with someone, unless it was someone who was in the same scenario with me, like a code or something. Then to debrief with them was very helpful sometimes. What happened? What do you think we should have done? Or what was that about? Or how do you feel about what just happened? That's debriefing. And that can be very helpful if it's with someone who's there in the same situation. But I didn't find that debriefing with someone that was not there or someone who was not medical at all was very helpful for me, because I ended up having to explain everything and it was sort of reliving it in a way that didn't feel like I wanted to just be heard and understood, right? So what I learned that helped me so much was, I didn't know this is what it's called. It's called journaling, but I would just take a piece of paper and I'd make it really small, and I would go out to the cafeteria or I would go outside under a tree and just sit. And I found that my pen in hand, I allowed myself just to write out everything that I was thinking, everything about the, whatever came out. This, I mean, it would just be, this just happened. And it was like this, and it was like this, and it was like, and I would write it all out. And then I would find that I wrote out what experience it was, and I felt decompressed, sort of like taking a balloon and letting some air out. And then I would find that my process would be, after I sort of wrote what happened, then I would start writing about how I felt about what happened. This is kind of similar to the BAPE technique, Nicole, that I have shared with you before. So B is for background, what happened, and then it just happened naturally. A is for affect. How do I feel? And I would just write how I felt. I feel horrified. I feel terrified. I feel scared. I feel mad. And I would just write. And then I would look for solutions. And this is all my own coping. Like, what I would try to identify, what was the hardest thing? Like, well, the hardest thing about it is that somebody too young died. You know, somebody way too young died. And again, this doesn't take that long. I mean, this can all be done in 5 or 10 or 15 minutes at most, honestly, to process an experience. And that's the T. B is for background, A is for affect, T is for what troubles you the most. And then H is for how are you handling it, or how do you want to handle it? And that is what I would write. H is for how do I want to handle this? Well, I think I need to go talk to the mother. And I need to go and be present with her and hold her hand, or I'm going to send them a card, or, you know, maybe I'm going to write something like that. Or, well, personally, I think I just need to go outside and hit a tennis ball against the wall and just get out all my energy, or something else. Or I need to go and cry. As soon as I get home, I'm just going to let myself cry in the shower. You know, I would just sort of make myself a plan about what I thought I might need. Or I need a hug. You know, I'm just going to go find one of my classmates and ask for a hug and not explain. And E is for empathy, the end. So the BAPE technique is the end, is just to have empathy for myself too. I have empathy for everyone this happened to, and I also have to have empathy for myself. What I realized was when I did that, I could sleep. And when I didn't do that, I really couldn't sleep. And again, for everyone, it might be different. Some people, it might be singing or dancing or maybe not even addressing what happened. For me, it was always about, I just need to write about what happened, and then I can go to sleep and feel a bit more peace about it.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's so nice to hear examples of what has worked for other people, because I don't know, I think that a lot of people kind of have this blanket like, oh yeah, you should just go to therapy and, you know, talk to someone about it. But there isn't that recognition that, one, you have the time or the money or the resources to do that, but two, talking may not be the best mode of healing for yourself and may re-traumatize you to have to describe the situation to someone else, to bring in someone else's emotions and feelings, and having an outlet that is just your own, that you can share your thoughts and feelings. And I do find that when I have, you know, my checklist of things that I have to do, once it's on paper and out of my brain, I feel like I can then take a chill pill and relax a little bit. I love this quote by Dr. Kristen Kim, who's a resident of psychiatry at UCSD. She says, "The unspoken culture of medicine encourages self-sacrifice, deferred needs, and delayed rewards. We always want to put our patients first, but healers cannot optimally heal unless they themselves are first whole." In medicine, you know, I think we oftentimes take care of others before ourselves, and we're so used to being the caretakers that we don't think about, how do we prioritize our own wellness? What do we need? And we don't necessarily always have a caretaker for ourselves. And I think it's so important to take a step back and really check in with yourself, taking the time and finding the right solution for you and in terms of processing. And then is something that I'm going to try to come up with for myself as well of what's going to work. And it might be a trial and error. I might try a couple different things and see what sticks and see what helps. And I think anything that maximizes my sleep is going to be the best. And
yeah, exactly. Sleep is so important, Nicole. I mean, really, if you don't get to, it's like recharging your phone battery, right? If you don't plug it in and let it rest, it's not going to be working tomorrow. So you have to plug in your own battery and sleep. It's so important. And I liked what you said earlier too about just it can be trial and error, and it isn't always one thing, but everyone, it'll be different for you, or it might be the same or it might be different, but again, not to expect that you follow anyone else's pattern or process, but find your own. I was speaking with a new intern recently as well, Nicole, a few months ago, and we were talking about this exact question of like, how do you go in to where people are suffering the most and not get covered by suffering and get hurt so much and so pained by their suffering and have so much empathy, as you said. It's kind of like firefighters. You know how firefighters, they go into burning buildings. I mean, they're trained just like we are. They're novices just like we are when we're starting, and they learn from the more expert ones, but they all wear protective gear. They wear these huge, heavy-duty, fireproof clothes, pants, the tops, the coats, the helmets. They wear oxygen masks and oxygen tanks. And they go into burning buildings ready to be protected, right? So they go into the fire. We do too. But they have protection. And they come out saving lives. We do too. And so we need to see what protection can we wear, but not be so protected that we're completely untouched, right? They're touched by the experience. They're just not burnt. They're not killed, right? And that's our goal, is to not be so badly injured by the suffering of others, but to be touched, to go in and to be able to. So we have to figure out, what is it that protects me to allow me to do my work? And then I take it off and, you know, and go home and me again. I'm still my full self.
I love that analogy. Who are we? Why have we chosen this crazy career where we are running into the fire? What did spark that, right? We chose crazy careers. Thinking back to at least why, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to become a physician is to be that light and to be that person in the darkness and to be there for people at their worst days and make their day just a little bit better. And I think if I keep it simple and focus on, that's my goal, is just to make their day even a tiny bit better, then I think that's such a manageable goal, right? You being there, you caring for that person, regardless of the medicine given, you're making that goal happen and you're making that person's day better. And I think if you feel like you've accomplished anything and keeping it simple by focusing on just that little goal, things feel more manageable and you feel like, yes, I am accomplishing that goal. I am making a difference.
That's so perfect. Keeping it simple and manageable. I love that. Yeah, it isn't about like going in and trying to change everything. It's just like, here I am face to face with you. And so what do you need and how can I help you? And it's that presence, Nicole. It's your presence, your eye contact, your smile, your touch, your being willing to, if what they need at this very moment is a pillow, you go get them a pillow. What they need right now is some IV dopamine, you get them the IV dopamine. But I mean, it can vary from, you know, from this to that, but you can't, those making it manageable by just doing the one thing. What one thing can I do for you right now? And I think you're absolutely right. That makes it less onerous and less scary and less like undoable. How can I possibly do everything for this person? You don't have to. And you know what that wonderful Maya Angelou quote, she said, I've learned that people will forget what you said and people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And so, you know, sometimes I've had friends and family who've been in the hospital, in the emergency department or in the hospital, and the things they really remember were how that nice medical student gave me my first drink after I had surgery, or how that really nice nurse or social worker or doctor did something really kind for me or held my hand while they were doing the procedure at the bedside to take fluid out of my lung. I mean, those are the things when someone held a hand or someone looked you in the eye or smiled at you, that's what you really remember as the patient.
I love that. As we wrap up this podcast, bringing it back to that human to human level, and I've adopted a practice from Dr. Brad Monash at UCSF. After every single patient visit, you know, after we've done the physical exam, you know, talked about our findings on the tests and the imaging and talked about our plan medically for the day, he always leaves every single encounter by getting to the patient's level and asking, what else can I do to make your day even a little bit better? And it's surprising what patients say, because oftentimes it's, oh, you know what? I've been really wanting this strawberry ice cream and I haven't asked for it. And do you mind like asking the nurse for that? And that would make my day better. And it's not necessarily that medicine or that test that really will make the difference that day. It's asking the questions. And oftentimes it's a very easy get, and it can make the most for that patient.
That is so beautiful. That is so perfect. What a wonderful way to end our conversation today, Nicole. That is wonderful.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for being with me today, Shiva. This has been very therapeutic, our own form of therapy.
I agree, Nicole. I agree. Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun to get to talk with you and to record it for once. And hopefully it'll be meaningful for others as well. Thank you for tuning in today
and allowing us to be one of your meaningful moments.
Please rate, review, and subscribe, and share with friends, family, and colleagues. Meaningful Medicine was produced by Shiva Kayambashi, Nicole Hohenstein, David Elkin, Nikki Elkin, Ahaley Chattopadhyay, and Leigh Kodama. Editing by Nicole Hohenstein, Nikki Elkin, and Leigh Kodama. Intro and closing by Daniel Wendling. On Meaningful Medicine, we are careful to ensure that all stories are compliant with healthcare privacy laws, and details may have been changed to ensure patient confidentiality. All views expressed are of the person speaking and not their employer.